This is Dojo Live, Tech Without Borders, stories that bring us together. Hello and welcome to Dojo Live this Thursday, July 13th. My name is Kim Lantis and joining me is co-host America Guerrero.
Hello, everybody. Who is connected in a computer?
Who is connected to the computer? We've had a bit of technical issues today, but that's all right. So hi, Ame. And of course, our guest of honor today, the most important person of the show, is Barsan Mosafari, who is the founder and CEO of Kibo. Barsan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Great pleasure.
Yes, it's going to be a really fun conversation. We're talking all about machine learning, a conversation that's come up quite a few times here on our show. But this one's a bit different because what is machine learning? It's going to be rescuing the data team. But before we dive too deep into the topic of conversation, we would love to get to know you a bit better, Barsan. What's your story? What's your passion? And sort of what led up to founding Kibo?
No, that's a thanks so much for asking. Yeah, I you know, with a quick background on myself, I as you already introduced me, my name is Barsan. I'm based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, United States. Prior to co-founding Kibo, I was on the faculty. I was a professor at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Before that, I was at MIT. Before that, I was at UC Berkeley, and before that, I was at UCLA. So I usually tell people that my biggest career achievement has been figuring out how to move from warmer places gradually to, you know, colder and colder weather. For those of you who are familiar with
that. You're going the wrong way.
I know. I was just chatting a few minutes before the start of the show with America. I realized she's actually based in Cancun, so I got a bit jealous. But yeah, it's summer here in Michigan, so I can't complain. But joking aside, I've actually spent more than a decade and a half of my career. I also worked for a number of companies, actually, both startups as well as large companies along the way. But I would say I've spent the last decade and a half of my career working at the intersection of machine learning / AI and database systems. And that's what, you know, what I've been really excited about. It's just like working on figuring out how to use machine learning and statistics to build smarter data systems. And smarter could mean, depending on the context, faster, more scalable, easier to deploy, easier to use. And we've had a really fun time doing that, actually, with a lot of my former PhD students and collaborators in industry across academia. Some of the work we've done has been picked up by open source projects like MySQL running on millions of servers. Some of the work has been commercialized and acquired. But I guess the context of this conversation is the latest spin up from our research. It's a company called Kibo, which means hope in Japanese.
I was gonna say, I love it. What's Kibo? It's a really fun name. You have a super fun mascot there. So tell us more. What is the problem that Kibo solves?
We've seen just. To give you sort of a high level, happy to dive into details, but like the way we're seeing Kibo is like we want to be the data team's, and actually we are the data team's best friend, right? Like what we're happening is that, and what we've been seeing even before starting Kibo was like data teams are, and data engineers and data analysts and businesses really are really struggling with massive volumes of data, and the data sizes are not getting any smaller. The number of data experts who can actually manually curate the data, clean the data, analyze the data, make decisions on that data, and glean insights from it is limited. This is the daily struggle of a data engineer, a data team, right? How do you actually do all these things with ever increasing data volumes, with limited budgets, and with data pipelines becoming more and more complex, right? So we basically had a lot of firsthand conversations with a lot of businesses and, C-level execs and data teams really about like some of their daily struggles and concerns about like, how do we actually bring, get value out of the data that we're storing, that we're managing? How do you make better business decisions? And, the idea was we want to actually help data teams with these problems. And the idea was when all other hope is lost, there's Kibo. So the idea is called data learning. This is a concept that came out of the research I was doing with one of my former PhD students. And we saw a lot of traction, a lot of interest from large companies, and we decided to take it to the next level and commercialize it. And that's how Kibo was born, the hope for data teams. So that's why our mascot
is a dog. I love it. When all hope is lost, there's Kibo. You need to add a cape. He should have some like superhero element or something.
Shouldn't we? Right? I mean, that's the idea behind the dog, right? A friendly dog, right? Our motto is we're fast, fully automated, and friendly. So yeah, that's a fun robot dog that has those three qualities.
For sure, for sure. So let's now dive in to the topic of conversation that you chose today. America, what are we trying to answer?
Machine learning to the rescue of the data team. How can machine learning technology help manage insane volumes of data and keep cloud costs in check? So please share with us the secret, the superhero secret. Yeah.
Sure, for sure. Look, I think just a little bit of background before we sort of dive into it, just kind of zooming out and seeing what's really happening in the industry is that, you know, cloud warehousing companies like the likes of Snowflake, Amazon Redshift, Google BigQuery, and these kind of products have done is that they've done a really good job of lowering that adoption barrier, right? Back in the day, you know, a decade ago, for example, like, you know, most enterprises, most companies, most data teams, if they wanted to analyze their data, they would have to go and buy on-prem servers and licenses and have like expert Oracle DBAs or whatever DBMS vendor they were using. And it was a massive lift for these companies to be able to get to a point where they could actually analyze their data and glean insights from it, right? But what these products and essentially cloud data warehousing has done is that it's significantly lowered that adoption barrier. Now, you can go and spin up a cloud data warehouse, a Snowflake or Redshift or BigQuery in a matter of minutes and load your data and start analyzing it, right? So that's been really helpful in accelerating innovation, especially along the edges of an organization, right? You don't have to still rely on a centralized IT department, right? But that lowered adoption barrier, what that's done is that that's enabled a lot more applications, a lot more users and use cases to be onboarded to the cloud data warehouse, which is a good thing. But as a result of that, now these data pipelines are becoming more complex, right? Now people are adding more and more data sources. They're combining data from various different sources, and that's creating complexity. And these data pipelines are a lot harder to optimize for humans and data teams, right? It's overwhelmingly complex, as a matter of fact, right? So as a result, what we're seeing is that the cost of cloud infrastructure is going through the roof. Now, a lot of C-level execs, especially with the economy we're in, are now trying to figure out how to keep the cost of cloud warehousing in check, right? So that's challenging.
See, that's funny, because I always thought that the benefit of the cloud was that, the ability to scale up or down as needed.
No, you're absolutely right. So that, they've done a great job of doing that. But as a result, as I said, they've lowered the adoption barrier. But because the upfront cost is much lower, the barrier to start is much lower, right? You can easily scale up and down.
You don't have to have a dedicated team or house your own server.
You don't have to exactly have your own servers. And it's so much easier to scale up, as you mentioned. But they've basically increase the operating costs for these companies. So in other words, they've turned a CapEx problem into into an OpEx problem. They've lowered the adoption barrier, the upfront cost, but the operating cost is actually going through the roof. If you talk to these data teams, you know, they're spending massive amounts of money on things like Snowflake and Amazon Redshift. And sometimes, you know, they still have to onboard more applications, support more users, scale to even larger volumes of data, but these costs can get prohibitive. So this is where Kibo comes into the picture. We're solving the second half of this equation. The cloud data warehousing is allowing businesses to innovate, tap into data, allow more users and applications and data to actually serve the business, but you know, without too much of an upfront cost. But where Kibo comes into the picture is that instead of, you know, spending their data team's time on manually optimizing and maintaining these pipelines, Kibo is using machine learning data learning really to automatically optimize these complex pipelines and workloads and help these teams lower the do three things actually: lower the cost of their cloud warehousing, like lower their Snowflake bill and so on, but also speed up their queries automatically so they can actually do more with less money, and at the same time spend a lot less time tweaking queries and schemas and warehouses, and have more time to actually focus on driving their own business forward rather than worrying about how do you keep the cloud infrastructure costs at within budget.
That's really interesting to me. One of the things that's always kind of come to my mind when I think of getting valuable information from all of this data is asking the right question, right? If you've got all of this options in front of you, that's always where I'm wondering, is that where the human component comes in? Is that where we, not me, but data analysis and these professionals, it's the key to asking the right questions? Or is this something that the machine learning is now capable of doing as well? Like, not just saying this is what you've got and analyzing these huge numbers, but saying you should look at this.
No, for sure. I think that's a very, very valid point, actually. So I think the way, the reason why we call our platform data learning is because our goal is to not replace the human expert, right? Instead, we want to sort of alleviate the human expert from having to do all these complex, overwhelming manual tasks to free up their time to actually focus on questions and decisions that actually drive their business forward. But to answer your question, I think that when you think about the data analytics lifecycle, there's stages, right? One is the data acquisition and data cleaning, right? And curating that data. And you know, obviously the next question is, what are the hypotheses? What are the questions that business wants to answer? For example, it might be, hey, do we show an ad with a blue background or a green background or a red background for this particular demographic? If it's basically an e-commerce website, it could be the question could be that, hey, which of these items this particular user is more likely to purchase? Or if it's basically a supply chain environment, could be that, hey, predicting what are the kind of items that people are more likely to buy around this upcoming holiday, right? So asking that right question is another aspect of it. And then once you have those questions, then a data scientist, a data analyst has to sort of go and consult that data and either confirm or validate, so either validate or rule out those hypotheses, right, one at a time. So, and then the next question after that is that, okay, now I have this question, how do I ask this question most efficiently without, driving my cloud infrastructure costs through the roof, without basically having to go and hire 20 more data analysts to sort of scan through this entire data. So our platform at Kibo, our vision at Kibo is to actually help with the entire life cycle, not just from, automating and optimizing the databases and the queries, but also down the line, we're going to use, because we're learning from how users and applications are interacting with their underlying data. So our goal is to actually use this knowledge, use the learning that we have about the data distribution to do two things. Number one, suggest important trends to the end user at the end, which basically tells them, hey, look, we're seeing these interesting trends. Like, this particular KPI used to be here, now suddenly it's dropped. You see this demographic is a lot less engaged with your content than it used to be, right? And then when the data team or the business analyst has some questions, for example, what's the root cause of my revenue in this particular geography going down, we can also use the same kind of technologies, use machine learning to help with those kind of questions, to basically tell them, look, these are the most likely root causes of this particular phenomenon, right? Machine learning is very capable of handling these things. I'm sure you've heard of recent advances in generative AI and like machine learning being able to answer open-ended questions, come up with creative content like image, music, sometimes short essays and all of that. So the technology is there, right? Like we're at Kibo, we're just basically taken that first step, which is one of the major obstacles, which is how do we, for now, instead of trying to do everything, how do we take off those manual tasks that no one has the time to do off of the data team's plate, so they can actually focus, they can focus on asking the right questions for their business instead of worrying about how do I reduce my Snowflake cost? How do I, go around my entire organization and teach everyone how to write better SQL queries and things of that sort. So that's what Kibo is doing right now. And giving that money back to the company, to the businesses, to the customer, so they can invest that money back into their own business instead of just running, you know, clusters and crunching through data. We let them do all of that with less effort and less money and help them do it more efficiently.
I have two questions.
It's more fun. Yes. For the data analyst anyway.
For sure.
Yes. I have two questions, and I think that I could rephrase those in one question.
Sure.
Who are your users, and how is able machine learning to learn from different industries, and then you be prepared with your clients and start offering services that apply to the industries where they are located? Did I make sense?
Absolutely. So okay, let me ask the first part of your question. Who are our users? So one of the beauties of our, you know, one of the beautiful things about the, you know, the Kibo smart robot dog is that it actually runs in the background. We're not the crying child in the room. So we're not basically there telling the, you know, constantly bugging the data team, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that. It basically runs in the background. They basically focus on their business while 24/7 keyboards, smart models are monitoring the customer's workload, their queries, and they're optimizing the warehouse, their queries, and all of this, and saving money for that business 24/7 nonstop without the customer having to lift a finger. So who are the customers or users and companies that benefit from this? I would say at this stage of the game, anyone who's using a cloud data warehouse, for example, anyone who's using Snowflake. If your customer is using Snowflake, they're probably, they should give us a call. Like, we can totally help them reduce their cost overnight without them lifting a finger. Now, the second part of your question was how can machine learning do that, right? So humans can be very creative. Humans can be very smart. But at the end of the day, humans are humans, right? So when you look at the sheer volume of what's happening today in the data world, like, you know, companies processing sometimes terabytes, if not petabytes of data, you know, they have to support hundreds, sometimes thousands of users who are asking questions either directly by going to a database or, you know, interacting with a dashboard somewhere that's powered by a database. And you know, it doesn't take a lot actually for sometimes even a small company. We've seen companies with literally tens of employees generating sometimes millions of queries per day. Now, if you think about it, each of these queries has some characteristics. It's looking at certain parts of the data. It uses certain types of memory resources, compute resources, disk and IO resources, and all of this. And this workload is changing and evolving constantly, right? So, you know, can you go, like, for example, as I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, like, my background is I've been teaching databases, building databases, and selling databases my entire career, right? So if you show me a SQL query, I can tell you whether it's a good query or not, right? But if you give me a query that's like 3 pages long, it might take me actually, you know, 10, 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes just to look at that query, analyze it, make sure it's doing the right thing, it's written efficiently, and all of this. Now imagine what's gonna happen if you're gonna overwhelm me with 1 million queries like that, and tomorrow some of those queries have already changed, right? So this is why where machine learning comes to the rescue. You know, we're basically training models on millions of data points, like literally every single day. Like, there's hundreds of queries on our platform that we're optimizing the warehouses for. And, you know, we're looking at many, many statistics, like the number of bytes scanned, the type of the query, what time the query arrived, what kind of operation that query did, how long that query spent queue, you know, in the queue, how long it took getting executed, how often we've seen that query in the past. A lot of other statistics like that. What was the size of the warehouse it ran on? And then these things could be very overwhelming for a human, right? To look at those things, like, you know, and scratch your head and say, oh, I think the right thing to do would be to optimize this query like this. And out of these million queries, here are the things that you have to do. Whereas machine learning models, you know, I call them infinitely patient and infinitely smart. They can, you know, you can train models. They're not going to get bored. They don't have to take off at 5 p.m., they're basically constantly monitoring your data, analyzing it, learning from how, you know, fluctuations happen in your workload and your business, what time, what kind of queries usually arrive, what are the characteristics of those queries, what are the performance and resource and cost implications of those workloads. And that's really where machine learning has an edge over humans, because it doesn't get tired, it doesn't get bored, it doesn't get overwhelmed. You can train really, really smart models. One of my favorite quotes from one of our customers at Kibo is that even if I wanted to manually optimize my workload, I couldn't have done what Kibo does for me automatically. And that's not because they don't know how to optimize queries. It's just because we're talking about millions, sometimes tens or hundreds of millions of queries that are constantly changing. And America, there was a lot of
Well, I was curious as to you mentioned, you know, this engineer, like I have the capability. Well, I can do it, but I can't do it at this scale.
Exactly.
And, you know, being thankful for that. But is that a, what's the word, a speed bump or something that you do have to get over with your users? Like, do you have to convince people of the quality component or like the letting go, you know, like not having to have the control of everything? Like, how does that work, or how have you seen that trending?
That's a very, very good question. Look, I think everything, trust is the most important thing, right? So at Kibo, we don't take trust for granted. We actually earn the customer's trust. We give people a two-week trial because, you know, I could be sitting here and lecturing about like machine learning and treat this as a classroom, but like what we actually offer our customers and users is like, we give you a free two-week trial. You're in full control. You get to tell us which warehouses you want us, for example, you know, let's say you're a Snowflake customer, which warehouses you want Kibo to optimize, how you want them to optimize, what's the range you're okay with Kibo optimizing, what days you know, you're okay with us optimizing, and then, you know, how aggressive or conservative you want the models to be. So they in full control, they have full visibility into what Kibo is doing. It's not like, you know, we're fully automated, but the user can always override. They can tell the models how far they're allowed to actually operate and all of that. And all
so,
we ask
so it's sort of like the two different people at the swimming pool. You know, exactly. Some people like to get their toes wet and then their feet wet and then they get the calves and they work up to the knees. And then there's others who just dive head first.
Absolutely. And exactly. And that's exactly what Kibo does. We give people a slider actually where they can decide how aggressive or conservative they want the models to be. And we tell them actually something even better than that. We tell them, hey, look, all we need from you, we don't need your trust. We don't need you to let go of the steering wheel. All we need from you is start to finish is half an hour. That's our entire onboarding. And I think one of the four reasons why our platform has been so popular is that we actually don't require, we don't create more work for data teams. All we tell them is like, we need one engineer's time for half an hour, literally start to finish, to just connect the warehouses they want Kibo to optimize. There's no maintenance, it's a set it and forget it. And then typically most customers actually see savings, like they see the bill drop noticeably within 24 hours. So it's an insanely short time to value. And then the ROI is right there. We actually charge customers just a small percentage of whatever we save them. So even from a pricing perspective, it's a no-brainer for our customers. We don't tell them, hey, look,
so that's your skin in the game. Like you earn a portion of what you save. So if they're not saving, you're not earning.
Exactly.
Interesting. That's a very interesting pricing model.
It is actually, and I think it's the, you know, I also our customers and also love this model because our incentives are aligned with the customer. The more successful they are, the more successful we are. We have every incentive to optimize them more and more and more, right? So if we basically save a customer, let's say $3, that's never happened. Like customers always, we have customers who are spending hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars on our platform. But the idea is that if we don't save you anything, then we're not gonna charge for anything. If we save you a lot, we take a small percentage of that a lot. If we save you a different amount, it's just a percentage of that. So that's how you earn the customer's trust, by showing them that your incentives are aligned, by letting them, giving them full visibility and, you know, making sure they're in charge. They can at any point in time come in, you know, with a click of a mouse, they can actually disable those models. They can see what the models are doing, how far they've gotten, how much they've saved. And, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, those 2 week trials. Most of the time the customers let go soon before the end of the 2 week trial, because seeing is believing. When you see these things work and they make sound decisions, then, you know, depending on your level of comfort, you can decide how much you know, how much you want to be involved.
In this digital transformation era, what is the trend for you and your customers? Companies who are desperate and want help right away, or companies who are preparing and being smarter with the data and preparing to reduce cost, or what is the trend?
I think the trend we're seeing is interesting. I think it has to do with the economy and the recession that we're all seeing, is that data teams are being asked to do more and more, right? Their headcounts are not growing, their budgets are not growing. Sometimes their budgets are being cut. At the same time, they're being asked to do more and more. So the trend is, you know, I've never met a data team that's told me, hey, I have too many team members, I don't have enough to do. So the trend is every data team that, you know, we cross path with come to us and they're overwhelmed. They have more things on their plan that they can do. And they would definitely like to spend less money on infrastructure and more money on, you know, moving their own business forward.
Perfect. You know, we are coming to the final few minutes of the show, if you can believe it or not already, Marcin. You know, I want to bring it back to you as a leader and as an individual and some of maybe your lessons learned, your words of wisdom. What would you say is a do and a don't, perhaps, when it comes to founding a company that you might counsel others who are in a similar position or aspiring, right, to be a founder? What's something that you found works really well for you and something that you lived through or maybe survived that you would counsel someone else not to do?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, when you start a company, one of the things that's my favorite about, like, you know, being a founder or co-founder of a company is actually you get to wear so many different hats. So you learn a lot about yourself. Like, you learn about what areas you're actually better at and which areas you need to lean on others and build that team and all of that. I would say the thing that's worked really well for us is always putting our teammates and our customers first, right? I think that kind of mindset that we should be basically always, like, thinking not just about a short-term benefit, right? But we're thinking about, like, building a long-term relationship, a long-term partnership, where it's within our company culture. Like, you know, we're investing in the growth of our own team and really listening to what every single person in the company has to say and what they actually think about the right thing to do. And also listening to the customers. It's very easy to just go and sit in your closet and think about, like, here's the product we're going to build. But I think part of the reason our product has been so popular and successful is because we've been listening to customers. We've been listening to the pain points that they're dealing with every single day. So I would say that's the thing that's worked really well for us. And I think the thing that would not work for us is just not listening to customers and just going off of some hypotheses and assumptions. So I think it's the same thing. Like, the thing that's worked for us and the thing that I would advise other founders not to do is to ignore the voice of that customer.
Have you been able to apply your Kibo technology and machine learning to the data you receive from your customers? Or is that still a fully human function of you getting your customer feedback?
Oh, getting the feedback from customers. So, have we started learning from customers using machine learning? Is that your question?
Yeah, like, are you utilizing your data analysis and machine learning components on that, or is it still very human to human?
That's actually a very good question. So the beauty of machine learning is that it actually learns. Like, our product learns from the customer's data and interaction, how the applications are dealing with our thing, right? For example, if we see that these queries and this workload is doing this, and this is how Snowflake works, the models automatically learn. So that's something that's actually baked into our model. We actually hold patents in this space, right? So our model is constantly learning. Our product is constantly learning from every single customer, every single use case. But you know, we're not just relying on the models to learn while we're asleep. We also have a constant communication channel with our customers. Like, at the end of the day, you know, our users are humans and we're humans. And I think having that very honest, transparent, open conversations with your customers face to face, you know, whether it's via Zoom or in person, is crucial. So I would say we definitely do both of them.
Perfect. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your time today. We do need to wrap up. Stick around for just a moment as we go off air. Before we do, we'd like to remind our viewers that we actually do not have any shows coming up next week. We're going to take a little summer vacation, but we'll follow that up. I believe it's on the 27th of July with a show with Prolific Machines. It's going to be really great talking about, you know, diverting a little bit from the software technology. And this is more about biotechnology and I'm having a blank here for words. It's the grown meat that is grown and not coming from an animal. So it'll be really interesting conversation. So no shows next week, but we'll see you the Thursday following on the 27th. All right, 10 o'clock a.m. Pacific. Thank you again, Barsan. We wish you and the Kibo team nothing but success as you move forward and come to the rescue of Data Team.
Thank you so much for having me. Great pleasure chatting with you. Take care.
Bye.
Check out past episodes, transcripts, blogs, and more on our website, dojo.nearsoft.com.